Startup. It's a word that is full of anticipation, and it's almost become kind of a hip thing to be a startup. But isn't the real point to graduate from being a startup to actually being an established business that is making money and training employees and growing?
No, you don't want to be a startup for a long period of time. You know, when you evolve past that, that's when you can start taking care of all your obligations. You could start growing. It's exciting to be in all stages of business. You and I have each been there. You know, when you get to that point that you've got the employees, you're growing, you've got the customers, it's exciting. However, you and I right now are watching a class of students, and they are at that very beginning. Some of them have a lot of uncertainty. I think what's really cool is the listener who's enjoying this ride with us and is going to enjoy this ride with us is either going to hearken back to what their experience was, or they're going to say, oh my gosh, these guys are really going for it. Good for them.
Starter Studio is not an incubator. I thought that it was, and we actually talked about this podcast maybe being called Incubator, but we found out that it's actually an accelerator.
An incubator generally has a longer-term relationship with a company, and they come in individually. They don't come in as a cohort. Whereas with an accelerator, the companies come in together as a class. So like we just started Starter Studio with 8 companies. They all come in day one together and do the orientation, and they go through the class together, and it's 12 weeks. So it's a finite amount of time. There's a lot of content packed into those 12 weeks, and it's very structured. Whereas an incubator, that content is generally spread out much farther and is a little bit more tailored for each individual company.
One person you're going to want to get to know real quick around here is Melissa Wasserman. She's the Director of Operations for Starter Studio.
I'm Melissa Wasserman. I'm the Director of Operations for Canvas and the Director of Programming for Starter Studio. So I've been here for not quite a year. I started just before our fourth class and been there through all of the fourth class and now starting the fifth.
I'm Josh Ellich.
And I'm Brian Orr.
And this is Accelerator.
Accelerator.
Transitive verb, to bring about at an earlier time,
to hasten the progress or development,
to move faster, to gain speed,
to hasten the progress or development,
to move faster.
So what I'm really excited about in this podcast is it's going to be a little bit Shark Tank. It's going to be a little bit Apprentice. It's going to be a great story. We're going to be in the trenches with 8 different startups over the next 12 weeks, and we're going to be documenting their journey. And as we're beginning to see already, it's going to be a wild ride. We've got some great characters. And what's really exciting is at the end of this, you and I both know they're going to be in a completely different position than they are right now.
And they have huge odds to overcome in order to get there.
All great intentions, some great energy, and some great passion behind the ideas. But, you know, they've got some things to learn.
Let's be honest. Orlando wasn't always known for its technology startups. Yes, there were some really good established tech and engineering employers in the area, notably EA Sports, Lockheed Martin, Disney, and an innovative little organization called NASA. But as far as tech startups in downtown, not so much. The place where this is all happening now was once the center of Orlando's nightlife, known as Church Street Station, and in the 70s, all the way through the mid-90s, it was a must-visit spot in Orlando. It was styled at that time as an over-the-top homage to the Old West, anchored by the beautiful Cheyenne Saloon with its curved wooden staircases, stained glass, and golden paneling. Church Street is right across the street from the Amway Center, home of the Orlando Magic. Years ago, I remember a friend pointing out a window at the pub Phineas Fogg's, where Charles Barkley once famously threw a rowdy detractor through a plate glass window. Fun place, but not technology. Now when you walk into this building, you open up the same big wooden doors, and you enter a large room, still with some golden tiles. Look up at the mahogany wooden ceiling 50 foot above you, with transom windows filtering in the Florida sun. Below the dome is a bronze fountain and an antique elevator. But when you look around, you see the glass and modern design of a high-tech workspace, Canvas, that serves as the home for Starter Studio. Goodbye, Old West. Watch out, West Coast. Well, maybe.
My name is Josh Ellich, and I've worked in and out of the media for the past 20 years. I've had a couple of startups. one that's done pretty well. And today I do a lot of work in helping startups with their public relations and helping them get lots of publicity. So this is very much a passion project for me to be involved in seeing these startups grow their own brand and kind of grow as a startup and accelerate.
Before we get too far into this, I want to make sure that you are introduced to more of the leadership team from Starter Studio.
My name is Greg Pollack. I'm the founder of Starter Studio. I started about 2.5 years ago to help startups not make the same mistakes that I did in my career.
In case you missed it because Greg rushed through it, he's a pretty humble guy. That's Greg Pollack. He's the founder of Starter Studio, as well as the founder of Code School and Envy Labs. And really, he's the most influential person when it comes to the Orlando tech startup scene. Kind of the Orlando version of the tech godfather, if there is such a thing.
In the program, I do like monthly one-on-ones with each of the startups to sort of check in with them and make sure they're progressing and listen to them and help them where I can as a mentor and sort of facilitator. Melissa does most of the heavy lifting, but I try to help where I can and also facilitating a demo day at the end.
So you mentioned the mistakes that you made early on. What would be some of the most glaring of those mistakes that you're helping prevent?
The biggest thing is that I wish I would have done is, number one, get myself surrounded by other tech entrepreneurs that are around the same size as me. So what happens is when you have these cohorts, like half the value of Starter Studio is simply working next to people that are having the same problems that you are, so you can kind of form a bond and ask for help when you need help. Not just now, but, you know, a year from now, some of the friendships that have started at Starter Studio turn into, you know, co-founders and, you know, like last for a long time.
Hi, my name is Donna McKenzie. I'm the executive director of Starter Studio, Canvas, our co-working space where Starter Studio is housed, and also Firespring Fund, which invests in early stage tech companies. I'm here because I'm passionate about growing tech companies. I've been growing tech companies for the past 20 years on an individual basis, working in them as CFO, COO, and other roles. This allows me to do it in a broader scale.
I'm excited to see these companies in person. It's the on paper, we learn about the company, but it's when we actually meet the people that we learn about the team and whether they're a good fit or not.
Are you often surprised by what you find out when you meet people in person?
Always. Like, I read the paper and I'm not good at like reading the name and knowing even how to pronounce it or say it, or so I never know what to expect. I never know who's going to walk into the room.
The interview process is really exciting because, you know, you don't know what's coming in the door. You have an idea because they fill out an application, but you really don't know the passion behind it. You don't really understand the genesis of their idea. So this gives us an opportunity to meet them for the first time and figure out if they're a good fit. Do they have the drive? Do they have the passion? Are they coachable?
For someone who doesn't know anything about Starter Studio, do you have like a elevator pitch for Starter Studio?
Put me on the spot, which is funny because I'm about to give a workshop on elevator pitches. So basically, we help companies, tech companies, they have to be tech companies, go from the point of having an idea or potentially an early prototype to having a marketable product in 12 weeks. So it should be fairly robust at that point. They've done a lot of customer validation, and we take them through the lean business model practices. So they learn how to do customer validation. They make sure they have good product market fit. They learn how to market. They learn how to build a product that allows them to do testing along the way. And then we ended a big demo day where they get to present their company in front of about 300 members of the public.
So there are incubator and accelerator programs galore in Silicon Valley. We're not Silicon Valley, but Melissa explains how we're a little bit different.
So most accelerators also invest in the companies. We don't yet. We just don't have the funds to do that yet. But there aren't really any locally that are doing that. So hopefully our second stage accelerator will actually be able to invest in those companies, and it will be more like a true sort of Silicon Valley accelerator. They generally invest in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 in the companies initially. So that's what we're hoping to do with our next second stage accelerator.
Is there an advantage, though, to being in an accelerator that isn't investing?
Well, there is the obvious advantage that they're not giving up equity. So most of the accelerators that do invest, they take an equity stake in those companies. And so we don't do that. And we do have a small stipend that they're getting of $2,600, but it's not really an investment. So we're not taking any sort of equity. So they come out still as a whole company being able to give that equity to larger investors.
Yeah, so I can see how that would be seen as a benefit in some cases if you aren't at the stage where you're ready to do that yet, I guess. I mean, maybe getting $20,000 probably to most people feels like a good thing, but...
Well, and it also means we can accept different type of companies. So all of our companies don't have to be high growth, immensely scalable in the very near term future. So companies want to come in here and they want to build, I wouldn't call it a lifestyle company, but a growth company that's not going to ever seek investment and they want to bootstrap. That's an option for these companies because we're not going to take an equity stake.
Okay, so you said two tech accelerator insider words. You said bootstrap, and then you said, what was the other thing? You said bootstrap and lifestyle business. And I know lifestyle, like I know what that means, and that's kind of a dirty word. So explain what those two things mean to someone who doesn't have context for that.
Sure. So bootstrapping just means that you build your company without taking outside money. Generally, that means through customers. So you go and sell early and you use that money, reinvest it into the company and grow the company organically. And that's a fabulous thing. Most companies do that. Most companies don't get investment. Lifestyle company, I agree with you. People think it's a dirty word. It's not. There's nothing wrong with a lifestyle company. It's just not, it's not as sexy. And nobody's going to invest in a lifestyle company. Because what it means is that you're going to do it forever. And it's going to provide a great life for you, your husband, your kids, whatever. They can work in it. Think of it like a family-owned business. But an investor's not going to invest in it because they're never going to get their money back out. Because to get your money back out, you have to sell the company or go public or something along those lines. So if that's not your plan, you're a lifestyle company. And that's okay.
Other accelerators are often, they take equity and they give companies money, and because they give them money, they have to be fully invested and you know, fiduciarily responsible for their success, which means a lot of other accelerators spend a lot of time helping those other companies raise money. And what I love about Starter Studio is we don't have to care that much. And because we don't have to care so much about them raising the next round, because we're not invested in them, we can care more about teaching the founders and giving them a well-rounded education. And we don't have to care if they're a lifestyle business. We don't have to care if they're a nonprofit. We can just help them be a successful business, whatever that means. And even if they're not successful, we can help those founders learn what they need to learn in order for their second startup to be successful. And I feel like that allows us to create a more well-rounded education than a lot of the other accelerators.
Is there any downside to pumping out a bunch of lifestyle businesses, though?
Not at all. There's a buzz and there's hype around raising money and trying to be a unicorn if you're in the Valley. But it's so unlikely that your business will ever be a unicorn. It's so unlikely that you're ever really going to raise money. If you want to create a successful business, you should be aiming to create a lifestyle business, because there's more likely that you will succeed. And there's nothing better than working for yourself and being your own boss and getting to create an amazing work environment and doing something that you love. Because if you focus on doing what you love, and that's the whole reason you go into business. It's not because you're trying to make a lot of money. It's not because you're trying to raise money. It's because you're doing something that you love and hopefully making an impact on other people's lives. And if you can do that and make a living off of it, then I think you're pretty damn lucky.
So what's really cool is we get to be the fly on the wall with Donna McKenzie, Melissa Wasserman, and then we've got several other business leaders that have agreed to be a part of this selection process to decide who gets into Starter Studio.
And not everybody gets in.
Not everybody gets in. Who are you? What do you do? Why are you here?
Why am I here? I'm here because I really I appreciate all the hard work that Melissa does, and I wanted to at least give her some support. Actually, I'm one of the managing partners for Ben Bello. We were one of the founders
And it's a fully committed venture fund here in Orlando, Florida.
Great.
We make very early stage seed state investments, probably the first money in any deal. So this is just the right opportunity for us.
Richard weighed in on the idea of a lifestyle business and what that means to an investor.
You start a company because you really want to be able to sell people this bottle of water, and you think it's going to create tons of value and they're going to be satisfied and you get a satisfaction out of that, then don't get investor money. Because you want, if that's what you want to do for the rest of your life, figure out how to do it and do it. And more power to you. You can run your own company as long as, for however long you want. Investors want to return on their money as quickly as they can get it. Yeah. And so you got to be in it first. Your vision's got to be relatively short term.
What do you think of the local environment overall in Orlando
for startups?
If I'm a tech startup,
it's fine. It's not San Francisco or the West Coast, but there's plenty of money here. There's plenty of opportunity here.
So our first American Idol judge, as it were, is Michael Judith, and Michael is a very, very likable person. Unless you've got a microphone in his face. But he got around that pretty quickly, which you'll hear.
Yeah, he was telling a story about Venezuela to one of the other mentors, and he didn't want me recording it. I'm not sure exactly what went on in that story, but you can ask Michael about it if you ever bump into him in the street.
I've been involved from day one when Greg first came up with the idea. I thought it was a great idea. It was the next step in what we need in entrepreneurial development in our community. And so I jumped on board and been happy to help ever since. My name's Michael Judith. I'm an experienced businessman with over 30 years of experience in over 60 countries worldwide, and I like to help the local startup community.
It's going to happen in Orlando. The problem is, it's a numbers game. Now, when you got the gray hair, like I have, and I don't know where his went. But you know, the numbers are the numbers, and I have the numbers, and I work by the numbers, and you need 200, 300, 400 things, and you might get 3 or 4 or 5. And so we're in the process of building the deck. It's young. We're in our infancy stage. We're about 30 years behind the valley. It's like he says, we've got so much money here, it's ridiculous. Teaching the money how to be non-development money and to be technology money is a whole different ballgame. And the way that works best is to give them a good return on investment. When they learn they might invest in 10 different things and one or two of them really pays big and the other gets written off, or you can mitigate their downside risk with tax credits and other things, that's a whole different ballgame. We just haven't gotten there yet because we're still a development community. We're not a technology community. Although we have great seeds for technology, better than planted anywhere else on the planet.
So one thing, too, that I'm curious about in terms of Orlando itself, does Orlando necessarily provide any advantages or disadvantages if you're a startup? And then how does Starter Studio remedy or facilitate that?
Some advantages are, of course, the cost of living. It's a lot cheaper here than other big cities. So that also means it's a lot more affordable to hire people here. If you're working on a shoestring budget, bootstrapping it or whatnot, you're going to be able to get money. It's going to last a lot longer here in Orlando than it would in any other bigger city. Also because of that, I find it's a lot easier to find talented people, because if you're in bigger cities, the talented people have a lot more people vying for their attention. So if you can provide a good culture and a good environment, well, it's going to be easier to find talented people, I think. All you have to do is go to the meetups. The only big disadvantage of being here in Orlando is if you want to raise money. I never raise money. I don't think you have to raise money if you're creative enough about how you run your business. But sometimes you do need to raise money, and that's okay if you want to do that. It's harder here, which is frustrating, because if you are in the Bay Area, you're going to have a leg up for raising money, because you're going to be there next to, you know, an extra, 10,000 angel investors that have made their money in tech, so they understand they want to invest back in tech. I didn't really understand that until about a year ago, that it's not just about finding people with money. It's about the people in these big cities are used to investing in tech startups. So they're more likely to invest in tech startups.
There's money here in Central Florida, but it's not real organized, I've heard it said.
Well, it's not real organized, and they're not used to investing in tech startups. They made their money in other ways, in real estate, in the stock market, right? So the way you get more investors here is you have to educate the more wealthy people that have the money to get them to invest more in local startups. And to do that, you need to have more local tech startups that try to raise money.
So a lot of times the starters will come in and they believe they've got a brilliant idea, and they should feel that way. But one thing they're going to hear and we're hearing is an idea isn't enough. You need more.
It's not the idea, okay? They're all, maybe you're just sitting around a room, and even myself and Michael, as old as we are, have great ideas. It's what happens is, can you turn it into a revenue producing opportunity? So, you know, it could be a good idea, but can you make money with it? And can you make money from an investor perspective, enough money that makes an investment reasonable and it's unprofitable? First thing we look at is a coachable team. If there's a team that's coachable, we take a lot of involvement in the companies we invest in. And if the companies are coachable, it works well.
So beyond an idea and coachability, is it, what other things do investors like to see?
Scalability. It's got to be able to scale easier. You know, so it's that if it takes five people to make $100,000 in revenue, and it takes 10 people to get $200,000, that's not really scalable. But if you can get five people for $100,000 and six people make it $300,000, that's a scalable business, and that's really important. And some barriers to entry, just that not everybody can go win and compete with it. You look at, you know, if you think of the concept around Uber, taking, you know, a car for hire to take someone from this point to that point, not really an exotic or creative idea, but all the software behind it, the concept and the opportunity behind it, and just the thought process, the lack of not a big need for upfront investment in cars and so forth, it really works. So it doesn't have to be a revolutionary idea. It could be evolutionary. And the process is just got to be able to scale. One of the things that we raised a lot of money as we were starting companies here in Orlando. We raised a lot of money from outside, and oftentimes on the West Coast, you know, people say, Orlando, you know, it's retired people and it's Mickey Mouse, and people only go there for vacation. They don't quite understand. Get a couple more successes and those kind of things. You know, we sold Mesh Networks to Motorola for a little over $300 million, and we were in less than 4 years. Channel Intelligence was a great deal with Google. And we had a few more kinds of things like that, and it brings attention.
And then you've got Ron Cook. Ron has worked in education most of his life, and he, in fact, has his own startup, and he was also part of this selection process.
Yeah, the person that thinks all they need is money and marketing to take their next great idea, that's never going to work if they're not willing to listen to customers. And I mean, and the joke for me, having gone from being an educator for 10 years to going back to being an entrepreneur, I taught that methodology, and now the joke with my former students and graduates is, now I have to demonstrate I know what the hell I'm talking about by actually doing it. And that's what we're doing. And it's an agonizing process, going customer by customer and actually sitting and listening, but we have to become what they want us to be. And if we can do that, we'll be successful, because we're sort of co-creating products and services with our customers.
One of the things a lot of people don't understand, because we do so much hype and make so much about overnight successes, and they're so few and far between. The truth of the matter is, Google's a perfect example. Here they are in a software space. Isn't that the easiest place to scale and grow and everything? You had 11 people for 7 years before they even hit the radar screen. And having that patience, the endurance, and the passion to continue to pursue what you're doing and then pivot accordingly. You know, we had a lot of conversation here earlier with some of the people that have been interviewed, and it's like, okay, are these jockeys worth training, you know, because they're beginning their path, they're young, but to think that they're going to be the next Elon Musk, which is probably, I don't know anybody that had a shorter career than he did as far as to success. I don't know of anybody, really, but, you know, not Steve Jobs, not for sure.
Yeah.
You know, not even. Yep. I mean, not even close.
No, I mean, he suffered a lot to get where he was, you know, where it all ended for him. But I mean, he went a long way and took a lot of abuse to get there.
Mm-hmm. Now, it takes a number of people in order to make Starter Studio work. Our starters, as you're hearing, are getting a phenomenal amount of support from a number of mentors. Not only do we have mentors to thank for Starter Studio being a reality, but this accelerator program also has a great history of working with corporate partners in the community, and these corporate partners have become pillars here in Orlando in terms of supporting this next generation of tech startups. Not only do they participate financially in supporting Starter Studio, they're also supporting this podcast so that we can tell you the story of the startups going through this experience. And over the next 12 weeks, you'll see that these partners also provide mentorship and leadership. So it's a great system that's been created where established corporate partners can provide a hand up to business owners with some great ideas. Now, this season, there are two platinum-level partners, the first of which is the University of Central Florida, who does a lot of work locally in terms of supporting the growing entrepreneurial ecosystem. Ask most tech companies in the area, and they'll credit UCF as a great partner when it comes to education, technical resources, workforce development, and grant support, along with the other noble missions locally, such as Starter Studio. UCF has also partnered with Starter Studio through their UCF iCorp Community Affiliate Program. Now, entrepreneurs in the UCF iCorp Community Affiliate Program are going to get training and guidance from experienced entrepreneur mentors and trained staff utilizing the National Science Foundation iCorp methodology, which is just an approach to test and validate assumptions about their customers and value propositions. The entrepreneurs are also going to receive a small grant. Now, the other platinum partner this season that's helping make all this work is an audit tax advisory firm named Witham, who has assembled nearly 400 CPAs who provide accounting, audit, tax, and business consulting services. Absolutely one of the biggest challenges growing companies can face. And we'll get to hear from them in the weeks ahead as they provide mentorship to our starters as well. Now, the other partners this season include Akerman, who's a well-known law firm here in Florida and throughout the country with 21 offices. They provide experience in pretty much every area of law, and I suspect our starters are going to benefit from some targeted and timely legal advice. We also have support from Envy Labs, a local web consultancy and code school, who teaches coding in a really fun, accessible way. That's going to come in handy. And then finally, Corridor Legal, who specializes in business law, venture capital law, and startup law with a focus on technology companies, amongst other areas of practice. So, in a sense, we've assembled the Justice League of corporate partners to help our starters succeed. In the weeks ahead, we'll get to meet and capture the good that's being done from all our corporate partners who support our starters.
Lean methodology. Have you read the Lean methodology book?
I listened to the audiobook.
Okay.
About two-thirds of it, actually.
I want to say that I read it. Like, I say that I read a lot of books. Yeah. That's Eric Ries. That's his book.
Yeah.
And I think I read, like, half of it when mm-hmm. I was launching my startup. And it's like, yeah,
I
got
get
this.
It, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I had that same reaction.
It's like, yeah, I get the point. You do things in small steps. You see if it scales. But like, they put legs to Lean. Like, yeah. They really make sure that the founders are doing things in a Lean way.
It's the idea that before you build something, you should first A, make sure that it's something worth building, and then B, don't build the whole thing to start with. You build a piece of it, or you build something that will allow you to validate that people really want it before you go and build the whole thing. And then throughout the entire process of growth, you're iterating and validating the whole way. So anytime you change something or build something new, you go and you test it with your customers. And then you come back and you say, did that work? Is that an improvement on my product? And if it is, then you keep it. And it's just this whole build, measure, learn cycle. So you're constantly validating with your customers.
So one of the jokes we usually do, we put an org chart up on the wall, and that person is every position on the org chart. There is no department. There is no function. That person is a one-man band needing to pull in outside resources. One of the things I think that Starter Studio does a great job of is getting people to admit what they don't know. You know, they're really good at one thing, but they're never going to be an attorney. They're never going to be an accountant. They don't need to be. They need to know how to use those resources effectively so they can concentrate on customer acquisition and the things that are really, really important. One of the things we hate hearing is, well, this business is a $15 billion industry. If we only get... rather than...
Have you heard this before?
Occasionally. But if somebody...
They usually say they're going to get 10%. It's like GE can't get 10%, but they are.
But the flip side of that, if somebody can sit there and describe how they're going to acquire their first customer and their second and their third, and they know that that's how you build a company, then sign them up, because we can get them there if they adopt that philosophy. Saying you're going to get, you know, 3%, 4%, 10%, doesn't really matter, some huge market, that shows you they really haven't thought about the customer acquisition process.
The mission is to help tech startups get further faster. Number one, it's for the startups. So we need to, our program needs to help our startups get further in 3 months than they would in 2 years on their own. That's a primary goal. And if, you know, and our sort of secondary goal is to also, and you know, help the community, which we do so by opening up a lot of our events to the public and also having a big demo day at the end, which serves a lot of purpose. Like the demo day at the end is great for, you know, putting Orlando on the map, getting angel investors here if they want to invest, getting additional mentors, getting the, you know, starters here in Orlando publicity so that other cities start to catch wind of these amazing startups we have in Orlando, so that other cities, you know, because I hear from other people around the state and even around the Southeast go, wow, I heard about this company and they started in Orlando and they went to this accelerator and now they're doing great, right? And so it's definitely great economic development for the city, which is what we believe in. We love Orlando. We want to keep companies here as much as possible. We want to grow the city.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So one concept we keep hearing about, and I think now the person listening is likely going to listen for this now because they've been trained, is when we get to meet the starters, it's great to listen to their ideas, it's great to listen to their passion, great to listen to their resources, but I want to make sure that I'm really going to be tuned in to listening to how coachable they are. And I think that is likely going to give us some clues of whether or not they're going to be a good fit for Starter Studio. Next time on Starter Studio.
Oh, that was interesting.
Wasn't it, though?
You may as well stop now while he still knows everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, coachability questions, anyone?
I mean, oh my gosh.
So if you're not, if you don't understand it now, you're never going to.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
I'm
going to
go with not just no, but hell no. Is that anybody else in that boat?
This episode of Accelerator was hosted by Josh Ellidge. We got recording help from Tony Cheeseball Elam and Kevin Hutch Hutchinson. Production, mixing, and scoring were done by me. We would strongly recommend that you subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss anything. You can do that by going to iTunes on your computer, or if you have an Apple phone, also known as an iPhone, you can do that on the podcast app. If you have an Android phone or a Windows phone or something like that, first of all, I'm sorry. But second of all, you can download a lot of different apps that are called podcatchers. Downcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, or basically any app with the name Cast in it. You'll be able to subscribe there. I'm Brian Orr, and we'll see you next time on Accelerator.